Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to Kudzu Vine for January 8th, 2012, our first regular show in 2012, back on a Sunday night at 7. We'll probably stay here for at least a few more weeks until Super Bowl Sunday, and after that, who knows, we may just do week after week at a time like that. But I'm David McLaughlin, and joining me as always, welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, and from Atlanta, but not the Wild Hawk Supper, correct? Catherine Smith.
That's correct. I'm just sitting here at home. Hello, everyone.
Yes. As I was rudely interrupted here, what I was getting to is this is the Wild Hawk Supper Sunday. And you've been there for us, Catherine, at times. Tim and I went down there. I think I've been in there twice, and you've been down there once during Wild Hawk Supper Sunday. But none of us are down here, but we are going to have a guest that probably has been down there for part of the time, Representative Rashad Taylor. He's going to talk with us. And then we're going to talk about a myriad of other topics. One more thing, we haven't played one of our games in a while. We're going to look at three egregious Republican acts in the past week and compare those. But first off, let's talk a little bit about the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary coming up this week and just kind of the state of the race. Catherine, what did you think of the result of the Iowa caucus and what does that mean for the race going forward?
Well, I think it means that Mitt Romney still has a big run ahead of him. It just seems like he can't get any traction. I mean, he didn't get, according to some reports, he didn't even get as many votes as he got in 2008. And it was so close. I mean, what, 8 votes between him and the second place, Ron Paul. I think it just shows a lack of real enthusiasm about the alleged run, front runner. So I think unless something, I think New Hampshire's going to be pretty clear that he's by all rights, he should win clearly in New Hampshire, but I think it's all going to come down to South Carolina and Florida now. And if those are tight too, then we keep moving, I guess.
Yes. He may become the first Republican to win Iowa and New Hampshire back-to-back, I guess since we've had the current structure, because I guess you could go back to the 18-whatever election, but then the political landscape and process was probably vastly different other than you have people voting. Tim, what do you make of this?
Well, I had a kind of a different take. First of all, it did get – the great news is it got Michelle Bachmann out of the race. That is the best news that came out of Iowa. It did give Mitt Romney a win, even though it was by only 8 votes. But in a state where 6 months ago he was expected to not even compete, and it produced a conservative alternative in Rick Santorum. It also showed me, David, that both Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry are on life support at this point because neither one of those did well at all. So the big winners were Romney, Santorum, and to a lesser degree, Ron Paul.
Yeah, it's a kind of interesting. Obviously, the top three vote getters all in the 20s, much tighter than the top three will be a lot of times. But if you think about it, I mean, it was an 8-vote divide. If people tuned in at some point in the night or whatever show they were, watching The Biggest Loser or whatever else, Last Man Standing comes on, and they show the results at times, early on. Ron Paul was winning. Later on, Rick Santorum's winning. So they both kind of get a little winner spiel out of that. Then the fact that it came down to 8 votes, I mean, that's about as close as you can get. And at one point, there was a dispute in which precinct counted votes right, and it looked like Santorum may have actually gotten more votes, and he could have won, and that carried on for a while. But then the report came out in Business Week that, or maybe it was Investors Business Daily, one of the business publications that did a little bit on the race, showed that, you know, told the Iowa caucus is truly a beauty contest. They actually have a delegate selection after the caucus, and those people will actually select the delegates to the Iowa convention, and a lot of Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, and some of the other people's supporters known. Ron Paul's supporters knew the process, stayed there, and actually got elected more people as delegates, and so when the Iowa votes are truly counted, Ron Paul's actually probably going to come out with more Iowa delegates than the other two. And, you know, and even though that's not going to give him the momentum rub, it's still something to think about. And it harkens back to 2008 to me when one way that Barack Obama really did a better job than Hillary Clinton is knowing the rules in some of those small states, what we don't think so much about, that had Western caucuses and different stuff. They knew the rules. They worked the process perfectly. And it looks like Ron Paul's doing a little bit of that. Had y'all heard that report, and what do you make of it?
I hadn't heard about that, but it doesn't surprise me. I think he has very diligent and disciplined volunteers and supporters. So I'm not surprised that they knew the rules and hung around and did what had to be done. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, Tim, did you hear about that?
Yeah, I had heard about it. I totally agreed with Catherine. You might remember there was a similar situation in the state of Texas where they voted one way, and then, you know, all the delegates met and voted again. And I believe that actually favored President Obama down there. You know, with Hillary Clinton, who had actually, if I'm not mistaken, won the primary. Look, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was interested in one thing, coming out of Iowa with the perception that he won there, going with a full head of steam into New Hampshire. The polls are showing he's anywhere from 7 to 10 points ahead in South Carolina. And he's moved to the lead in Florida. I think he's in a position to run the table. We'll get to that when we get to New Hampshire in just a minute. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
And it's almost a dual discussion. One thing that Mitt Romney did get a win on, because to me that anemic, 24% showing, meaning that 76% of Republicans didn't want him, was not that good. But one win he did get, you mentioned Michelle Bachmann dropped out, but nobody else did. Gingrich, Perry both stayed in. Had one or certainly both of those gentlemen gotten out, that would have been more votes for the anti-Romney forces to go to one of the other candidates. And so he did get a win there. Perry, obviously, he went he said he was going back to Texas to reassess his campaign. And usually that's code for I'm dropping out soon. And he didn't follow the playbook. Rick is staying in. I don't think New Hampshire is a good state for him. If he did stay in, just like if I were Rick Santorum, I would not even compete in New Hampshire. I guess Santorum kind of has to, because he almost has to take this momentum that's just fallen from the sky for him out for a spin. But to play in Mitt Romney's backyard for these candidates is really not a good idea for him. And then the report comes out that a group is going to, an anti-Romney group, is going to come out with a 30-minute video, something with the title like "The Real Mitt Romney," and it'd be interesting to see what effect this has. Which will be nice. I mean, it could just be that they distribute a lot of copies of this, and us Democrats might just want to collect a lot of copies for ourselves. Because apparently it deals with some of the business practices of Mitt Romney's group that would go in and downsize and fire employees. And we might could use these to our advantage if he's the Republican nominee. Now, Tim, you can get into New Hampshire, and you, of course, can respond to that video and anything else.
Okay. Well, Romney, of course, is going to win New Hampshire. He's anywhere from 27 to 35 points ahead. The big question there right now, and the reason Rick Santorum, I think, is there, is who will finish second?
And with how much?
Not only with Santorum, but you got to look. It would really help Santorum, by the way, to finish second there. It would legitimize his claim that he, and not any of the others, is the conservative candidate who can go the distance and beat Mitt Romney. Now, if Huntsman does not finish second, David, I think he's going to probably quit the race, leaving five of these folks to soldier on to South Carolina. Santorum badly, you mentioned Perry and Gingrich, Santorum badly needs both of them out before Romney does run the table like I was talking about a while ago. And the longer these guys stay in, the more it helps Mitt Romney and gives him the air of inevitability. And now I think Gingrich is probably going to stay in a while because some billionaire benefactor has contributed $5 million to his campaign. Well, that's pretty good walking around money, you know, for a few weeks. So this thing may go on just a little longer, but I'm sure Mitt Romney was cheered by the news that both Gingrich and Perry are staying in for now.
Well, Tim, I thought those Republicans didn't believe in that walking around money. So I don't know what kind of lies he's spreading, but
Well, I tend to agree with Tim that those ones in the lower numbers, you know, Gingrich and Perry need to get out if they expect to have any, you know, fuel against Romney. I watched the debate last night and was really surprised that they didn't go after Mitt Romney like I would have expected them to. It was kind of strange. Did anybody watch that?
I did and agree with you totally. You hit it right on the head.
I was really kind of shocked that
for you. So I didn't watch the debate. I was going to be a good Michigan sport for you.
Oh, thank you. But I just was surprised that they didn't go after him. I think Huntsman's out. I think even if he did, you know, miraculously get a lot of votes on in New Hampshire, I think he must be awfully tired of those guys and of, you know, being the smartest guy on the most articulate guy on the stage. I mean, if I were him, I would have gotten out a long time ago. But yeah, I think it's really going to depend. A lot is going to depend on who stays in, and you know how much Mitt Romney wins, and you know where, you know, if he you know just walks off with, you know, like 50-60% of the vote, then I think Tim's absolutely right. He's just going to run the table.
Yeah, one problem, of course, for the anti-Romney forces is right now Rick Santorum has the momentum, but you just can't escape the fact Rick Santorum's a weirdo. I mean, the guy is just totally different than the average American. You know, it was real funny. A lot of people, I said it, and apparently it was the most controversial thing on Hometown Headlines in months, if maybe ever. They got complaint emails when I told the story about, you know, Rick Santorum and his wife. It's hard to tell if the baby was, you know, died right after childbirth or was a miscarriage. I had originally heard the story as a miscarriage back in 2000, but then I later found out it was actually a live birth and stayed alive a very short amount of time. Very sad situation. They grieved and everything. I think that is totally appropriate. But they took the body, I'll say that now because I think I called it a fetus the other day, but if it was born live, that may not be the correct term. that took the body home to let the children see it and know that it was really a living thing. And it really got into a lot of abortion politics with their kids. And it just didn't seem at all like the thing the average person would do. I mean, there's many other things. The fact that he homeschooled his kids, which, I mean, people do that, but he actually made the Pittsburgh school district they live in provide the education. So it was like, well, the government's good enough to provide the education, but we just don't want to be around the other people's kids. We don't want to send them to school with other children, you know, the great unwashed. And so it's just a lot of these different things that just Rick Santorum just appears to be out of touch with the average American in 2012, probably out of touch with the average American in 1960. I mean,
well,
you guys,
I gotta tell you, I think all of them are out of touch with the ordinary American. Just watching them talk last night.
Yeah, I mean, what's the old book? Women are from Venus, men are from Mars. Well, Rick Santorum's out in Neptune. I mean, he's a little further away from the rest of us. You know, the other Republicans,
yeah,
they might be as far in as Jupiter. it's just, he's out there.
There's
no doubt that he's a little different.
Well, the thing is, he is so conservative, guys, that his base of support is going to be far narrower than Mitt Romney's or John Huntsman or something like that, or even Newt Gingrich would ever be. And I just don't know how well he would play to a general election audience. I rather suspect that he would turn them off. And a dead ringer reason I say so, look what happened to him when he ran up there for re-election the third time in Pennsylvania. In a presidential election, you know, where a lot of voters come out, a lot of moderate independent voters, and he got swamped by 18 points. And him, an incumbent senator, and the types of voters that voted in that Pennsylvania race would have been a microcosm of the country at large.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of middle-of-the-road type voters that you need to win, and he just couldn't get them. So you've got to wonder, you know, how if that's not the way he would do in a general election. I rather suspect that it would be. I'll say it again, guys. I really think they need to nominate Romney if they want to take a shot at winning the election.
He even backpedaled on his famous man on dog comparison to homosexuality. I mean, basically, I think they even said that he's realized that the country's moved more towards the center, to the left, whatever you want to say, on gay rights and gay people as individuals. And he felt that even he was out of touch when he made that statement. And he knew he needed to moderate his position. It's kind of funny.
Well,
some of those hardcores, if that could be used against him, Michelle Bachmann might have taken him to task for it, or maybe somebody else that could have wanted to run to the right of him.
Well, then don't you both agree with me that the Democrats would have a veritable treasure trove of statements like that Santorum has made that they could just pepper television ads with?
They have it with a
lot
of them.
Oh, absolutely. But, boy, I'm sure, as a Democrat, I'm sure loving that these guys are, you know, tearing each other apart right now. It's really kind of, you know, we don't have to do anything. They're doing all the work for us, and it's really quite a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, there's an article about reality television and how it's mirroring electoral politics, not the other way around, and we can get into that later, but once again, these choices are so bad. It's like casting a bad reality show. It's like, why couldn't the people doing the casting do a better job? The Republicans, I mean, I'm a Democrat, and I could pick out, you know, 5 to 7 people that would be so much better, that reflect
the different people, like, you know, the conservative, the moderate, the minority. I mean, some different kind of faces that, you know, resemble the current folks, but are just much better versions. And I don't know why the wrong people are running the party as they are.
Look, I know we have a lot of Republican conservative, listeners on the show, and I'd like to speak to y'all now if you're listening. Guys, just trust me on this. Either you nominate Mitt Romney or you're probably going to lose this election for sure. Now, you don't have to believe me, but I, in my heart of hearts, I feel that their chance to win the election lies with Mitt Romney.
Tim, I say this. I don't even think Mitt Romney will save them because I think their enthusiasm will be gone. I think Mitt Romney is so wishy-washy. I think Huntsman would be their better chance.
He would, but he can't win, and he'll probably be gone after Tuesday night. And you know, Romney is clearly the best of the front-running group. Clearly. It's not even close. Look who the others are. Good. You've already talked about Santorum, and they're not going to nominate Dr. Paul. They're not going to do that. Gingrich
and the Libertarian Party is going to do that.
Gingrich and Perry are dead in the water. It's got to be Romney.
Yeah. But Catherine,
you agree with me, don't
do
you?
I do agree with you. I tend to agree with David, too. To me, Romney seems like their Kerry to me. He has all the trappings of being a good candidate,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes right down to it, people don't like him.
But
John Kerry
came within 100,000 votes of winning that election right there in Ohio. Romney would give him a chance.
I see the similarities that Catherine's talking about with some of the stiffness that he doesn't connect, and he has changed positions. Kerry did change a few positions, but there are very marginal things, like the funding of Iraq, which, you know, that's not an overall position. Romney's changed overall positions on big issues.
I don't mean on issues. I mean just that, you know, nobody really gets excited about Romney. Nobody got excited about Kerry until the very end. I mean, I was here in Georgia. There was nobody supporting Kerry until, you know, very late in the game. And I think that it was hard to get excited about him. I mean, I supported him. I worked hard for him. I gave him money. But it was hard to get excited about him. And I think that Romney is going to be very similar in that way. Like, people are going to rally around him ultimately when he becomes the candidate. But it's not going to be the passionate, really enthusiastic supporters like President Obama had in 2008.
Yeah, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about Romney and dissect him because he will be around, not that it's a 100% lock he's going to win, but he's going to make it probably the better end with whoever else may fight it out with him.
Yeah,
and
true.
No matter else, what else they try. Well, the Kudzu Vine in our 5 year, or net getting close to 5 years, has been known for our little game segment, so we're going to have one. There was, the Republicans, if you've ever watched Keith Olbermann with it, Worst, World's Worst, but, you know, they're always doing egregious things, but this week, they really racked up some good ones. And one was from Kansas, outside of the South. The other was from Georgia. Another one will say Texas. And I'm going to run down these three. Then the three of us are going to tell which one we think is worst and maybe which one's the least egregious, if you will. But the first one, we'll start outside of Kansas. A representative, Mike O'Neill, sent out into an email and other places a picture of First Lady Obama, and she's carrying a Christmas sack as she distributes toys for Toys for Tots, usually the kind of thing you think most people could kind of get behind. And he compares her to the Grinch and goes even further by calling her Mrs. Yo Mama. I guess he thinks that's funny because it sort of rhymes with Obama. But, you know, it sounds like he's trying to be pretty ebonic in some kind of funny way at the same time. Well, apparently no one thought it was that funny, and he's now since apologized, but apparently he's done other things that have been a little sketchy in the past, too. That's candidate number one. Candidate number two, Judy Manning, state representative from Georgia, sent out on her Facebook that she didn't like Mitt Romney. And she really doesn't like Mormons. She doesn't trust them, thinks they're strange with their strange underwear. But even though her blast was against Mormons, she went a little further and she says, well, at least they're better than Muslims. And then talked about how the Muslims now have these shows, and I'm not, you know, all these shows, I don't know, trying to convince people how good they are. And so she's
no, it's the Mormons who have those. It's the Mormons who have those ads convincing people how good they are.
The ads, and there is a show on TLC or something. I thought she was referring to that. And, yeah, they have the ads. But a lot of churches have ads. Well, you know, trying to explain. But her strange fear of Mormons against Romney, that's candidate number two. And candidate number three, and I don't think it was put out by Ron Paul himself, but much like his son when his supporters stomped a person that didn't like him. He didn't come out and rebuke it very much. There's a video posted on YouTube and distributed against John Huntsman. And the basis of the video is John Huntsman, of course, went to China. He understands, can speak Mandarin. But worst of all, he adopted a girl from China. And so, therefore, are his values really American values, or does he have secret Chinese values? And at the very end of the ad, it gives John Huntsman the Asian-looking eyes and the traditional Asian-looking, you know, farm worker hat. So those are our three incidents of the week. Catherine, tell me, which one do you think is the most egregious, and maybe which one's the least?
Oh, I think the Huntsman one was really shocking. It was just so sophomoric in its it's the way the Chinese were portrayed, and very, very demeaning, I thought. Actually, I thought all three of them were really quite shocking in 2012. I think, you know, we need to be better people than that if we want to, you know, play on the global stage like we do. And it's so saddening to see that kind of bigotry portrayed by and. You know, I think they all denied any, you know, like even the one, the Mrs. Obama or whatever it was called. He said he didn't do that. He just forwarded it. He didn't read it. Well, you know, that's pretty stupid. Why do you forward something that you don't read? But anyway, I think the Huntsman one by the Ron Paul supporters was really pretty shocking.
Okay, Tim, your thoughts, and you can give thoughts on all three, and then you can rank them if you will.
Well, I'm going to say immediately that the worst one, I agree with Catherine, is the Ron Paul attack ad, because it, to me it looks like it questions the very patriotism of Ambassador Huntsman. It just about as well calls him a traitor, either that or some brainwashed Chinese convert or something. It was just scurrilous. It was horrid. The second worst to me is what Judy Manning said, because it attacks a person's religion, and it also, as our friends at Peach Pundit indicated, it showed a total lack of class on her part. She should be ashamed to even say anything like that. And the Michelle Bachmann, I'm thinking about Michelle Bachmann getting out and still happy about it, but the Michelle Obama thing I ranked third, but it's bad in its own right. Now, look, just imagine, like the story indicated, a well-known black politician
saying something like that about Laura Bush when Bush was in the White House, why, there would have been a screaming firestorm of complaints about that. And so, you know, this Catherine's right. This guy, that's not an excuse saying I forwarded it and didn't read it. Come on. Who does that anyway? If I forward something, I read the whole thing and think it's worth forwarding. Don't you, David?
One would think. I think reading stuff is actually a high bar for some of these anti-intellectual Republicans. So maybe we are expecting too much. But real quickly, before we get our call in, we may get to another topic first, I want to look at them, and I kind of wanted to put a tag with each. One that was most likely to make someone genuinely cry. One that was most likely to lead to some kind of fight. And one that was most likely to just make people point at the person who said it and laugh and go, what a dummy. How ignorant. And if I looked at the one that would probably reduce people to tears, it would probably be the Paul supporter video against Huntsman. I could see the Huntsman and the little girl, their daughter, crying over this legitimately because it is so hateful and hurtful, and it attacked a child, and therefore I have to reserve it the worst of the worst. I mean, the fact that someone would adopt a child, bring them into their home and raise them, and someone feels that they have subversive ideals because of that is just so hateful and dirty that I can't imagine Ron Paul didn't take the opportunity to rebuke these clowns that did it. It probably would have made a lot more people like him if he did, because sometimes when you get these chances and you take them to show ignorance, you know, you get rewarded for it. I mean, it's just the right thing to do, and politically it had been the right thing to do. John McCain, to his credit, when somebody did say something fairly racist against President Obama that wasn't even this bad, he stood up to her. And I think people respected him for it. So that was on that one. Now, as far as starting a fight, anytime you engage in, racism, white on black, it could start a fight. And it, once again, it's something out of so many decades ago. It's not even funny. And once again, what was she trying to do? She's trying to hand out toys to children. Can we not all just get behind it? There's sometimes when people of the other party, particularly the first ladies, do things that we all agree on. Laura Bush fought childhood illiteracy, trying to teach kids to read. Tim, you're a Democratic leader. How many times were you against that during Bush's 8 years?
Never. I applauded her for it as a matter.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, what's controversial? Sometimes we can all be on the same side. I think the American people actually like that when we can agree sometimes. And then the third one, Judy Manning. I mean, it was so dumb, talking about secret underwear and everything else. And I have no idea. I've heard the rumors of the secret underwear since I'm not a Mormon. They hadn't let me know about it. They still make me choose between Hanes and Fruit of a Loom. It hadn't been enough of a lure to make me want to join. But it's just not something I worry about. I mean, Harry Reid, I'm glad he's majority leader. He's Mormon. If Republicans think Mitt Romney's the best person, pick him. Don't worry about all this stuff. But it just shows, how silly it is. And I love when you're attacking one group, and somehow while you're attacking, you decide to throw it on another group. So then you have to offend two sets of people. She really stuck both feet in her mouth at that point. And I think, Tim, you were right. You mentioned about Peach Pundit. They took her to task for it. And I tell you what, they are doing a very good job about when Republicans do dumb stuff in this state of Georgia. They call them to task. And they also...
Well, it would be pretty hard not
good
to.
Good job not letting it. Is what?
It'd be pretty hard not to.
I'm just saying... Well, there's. I bet if you looked on Red State and some other places, you might not see that same level of filtering.
That's true.
Discourse. So once again, we continue to give them kudos as long as they do stuff like this, and praise them because it's the right thing to do. But just crazy stuff. I mean, when you see stuff like this,
you just have to point it out and discuss it. Sometimes, because it is maybe a little humorous in the ignorance, like in the case of Manning, and sometimes people just need to know,
wow,
like in the case of the other two.
The thing about Huntsman especially was just way, way, way over the line. So over the line as to be sickening. I mean, something as awful as attacking a little kid. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Hey, I don't agree with Ambassador Huntsman on a lot of the issues or anything like that. He's not my cup of tea. But come on, he's an honorable man, a decent man, a good public servant, albeit, you know, from a different political philosophy. They should get off of stuff like that, some of these off-the-wall folks.
Well, and there are people, I think, unfortunately, out there that if you go learn a foreign language, if you find any interest in a foreign culture, they think you're weird. And there is a there's a sliver of the American public that, you know, if you go to eat at a Chinese or a Mexican restaurant, if you want to learn Spanish or French or Chinese, if you want to adopt a kid with a different skin color than you, you're suspect. You must be strange. Now, luckily, this is a, you know, a big minority, a small minority of the people, but, I mean, these people need to get with the program and get off YouTube to boot if they actually want their candidate to win. Catherine, I mean, do you see that there are a portion of the people that kind of think this way?
Yes. I mean, I think that the people who support Ron Paul, I mean, it's not just this isn't the only example. There was the whole newsletter with the racist language in it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know that it'll hurt
him any because his
I can tell you this. Ron Paul's base of support is also very limited. You know, I've told it a million times that I blog in one place, and it's on a national blog that's dominated largely by conservatives. And I'm going to tell you, none of those people want Ron Paul anywhere near the Republican nomination, and many of them tell me there's no way they'd vote for him if he got the nomination. So, you know, his supporters are hurting him. Catherine is right there.
Yeah, and now he is hurting some of his supporters, like the lady that played on Saturday Night Live last night, Kelly Clarkson. Apparently her album sales are down since she said she supported Ron Paul, which I will say this, she said it before this video came out, because honestly, it's her First Amendment right to like who she likes. And
right.
If she liked him and then people like her music, that'd be one thing. Now, after this video came out, if you say, you said you liked him around the time this video came out, then that may be a different story because it was so repugnant. Well, Catherine, I'm glad you could jump on back in before our
I don't know what happened.
Our next topic, I just let you know I got you back in, is good news. And the main bottom line is, and this is the second Saturday in a few months, that we've gotten good news. The White House, or the economic team, if you will, said that we added 200,000 new jobs, and the unemployment rate dropped again. And it says 8.5, which, I mean, I believe it was, wasn't it in the low double digits not too long ago, and now it just steadily going down now to 8.5. And obviously the lower it gets, the better incumbents may do overall, particularly the president. But, I mean, I think this would be helpful maybe to even more incumbents as well. And there's, you know, this is in the season which some of these numbers probably are holiday, but then we know building starts as the weather gets better. Now, we are fixing to go through a little cold, but you have to think before the election, we're going to get a lot more good weather, more housing starts, other building projects, and sometimes there's a snowball effect. People go out to eat more.
buy other goods, and it keeps on rolling. How low can this thing go, and then what's it going to mean for re-election chances?
Well, you know, Ronald Reagan won a landslide re-election, 49 states in 1984, with an unemployment rate of 7.2%. Right now it's at 8.5. Now, that's the lowest since February of 2009, when the economy lost, you know, 750,000 jobs. If it drops, as George Will said this morning, just 0.1% per month this year, it'll be at 7.6. And that'll probably, not for sure, but it'll probably take the jobs issue at least off the front burner of the stove, if not off the stove altogether. But it does has to be sustained all year, David. I really think it needs to get below 8%. FDR was the last president to have an unemployment rate above 8% and still win, but he inherited a Great Depression. 7.8 was where it was when Obama took office. Get it below that, and it'll help his present argument that his policies are working. So, you know, otherwise the unemployment rate will be issue number one, and it would be a detriment to the president's reelection chances. What do you say, Catherine?
I think that as long as it continues to, as long as we continue to create jobs every month, and we don't go back. Like if we keep if the unemployment rate continues to go down with each month, even if it's just a little bit, I think that helps the president. Even if it doesn't, you know, go down by a tenth each month, or doesn't go down, you know, as low as we think it needs to, as long as it's a consistent lowering of the unemployment rate and an appearance of boost in the economy, I think that helps us. I think that's good. But even if we go down, you know, to below 8%, but then go back up, if we bounce around a lot, I think that hurts the president. That's sort of the way I see it. We've got to have a consistent improvement, even if it's just a little bit each month. That's sort of what I think.
Yeah, I think the key word is progress. If we're making progress,
right, exactly,
then people say, hey, we're on the right track. And, of course, the right track, wrong track, number's big. And, Tim, you mentioned Roosevelt, of course, in some of the analysis. It was like, well, of course, you have to throw Roosevelt out because people understood that we were in a recession. And because this is the worst economy that he took over since the recession, I'm not so sure that he doesn't even have to get as low as he would otherwise, because people may say, hey, we realize after what he took over from the past president. And secondly, this economy is much more global economy than it used to be. And Europe is an absolute mess. And one of the articles I think we all prepped on, it talked about the global financial crisis, the European financial crisis in particular, and how bad it is over there, and that we're actually doing better than a lot of European nations. And so people may also take that into account and not hold it against the president as they would otherwise do.
But I still think they need to perceive that things are improving. That's
right, exactly.
That steady drumbeat of improvement that Catherine was just talking about. You know, unemployment was high during Roosevelt's time, but from 1932 to 1936, it improved. Again, from 1936 to 1940, it improved. People had the perception that Franklin Roosevelt was getting things done. That's the perception right now that's kind of lacking. Confidence is still kind of low, right track, wrong track things. The president's approval rating as a result is still a little bit below what it needs to be to be comfortable. But let that employment situation improve as it has been doing for the last year, and it's going to be a different story in November. I really believe that.
Yeah, and then, of course, you add to the fact that who the Republicans elect, if they're a real non-starter for a lot of swing voters, that just makes it
right.
easier.
Right.
But if people are actually saying, because obviously an election of an incumbent is a two-part process. A, do we want to fire this person? B, do we like his replacement better? It's a two-part test. So if you don't even, if a challenger doesn't even get past part A, they can't even get into part B. And so these numbers would make the A question better for the president in particular and maybe some other incumbents around the country. And that's of both parties. I mean being fair, because they talk about it being an anti-incumbent year at times. Well, let's continue to move on through some other topics. One, once again, that's not a part of the South, but something that kind of follows up on last week's show. We talked about the U.S. Senate, and we did mention that Ben Nelson's retirement was going to make Nebraska very tough to hold. I think all of us were pretty much saying Nebraska is Republican, almost to the point where we might even say book it. Well, Bob Kerrey, who was the senator and governor of Nebraska, probably one of the most popular Democrats in Nebraska's recent history, if not overall history. I mean, William Jennings Bryan may surpass him, and maybe some other folks. I haven't studied as much Nebraska history as some of our listeners might. But Bob Kerrey's thinking about a return to the United States Senate. And I would have to think that Bob Kerrey would make it a race. A, he's got a little bit of a national profile from A, running for president, and B, serving as a university president outside of Nebraska. I believe it was in New York City. So he could bring some money to the race. And B, the fact that a lot of these voters would have voted for him in the past. They'd probably give him a very fair shake, making this a toss-up at worst. What do you think, Catherine?
I think it's really good news. You know, he's a likable fellow, and like you said, he's got a sort of a national name. He can probably, like you say, raise money from, you know, various places around the country, not just in Nebraska. And I think it's good news, I guess is the bottom line.
Yeah. TM, your thoughts?
Well, first off, David, let me give, if I'm picking between William Jennings Bryan and Bob Kerrey, I think I'd lean toward Kerrey because, now follow me here, Kerrey dated Deborah Winger, okay?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, how much better can you get there back in the day? But anyway, seriously, it would be welcome news if he gets in the race. The Democrats right now do not presently have a named candidate. Kerry would at least make this race competitive. Otherwise, frankly, we lose the seat. We just have to ride it off. I'm not saying Kerry will win. He might not. I'm saying we need him in the race in order to even have any race at all. It's just another place that the Republican Senate Election Committee would have to spend money that, you know, they could have spent elsewhere in what may be, you know, a pretty competitive year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not just, hey, he can make the Republicans waste money. I mean, this would become a high profile race along with Virginia, Missouri, a few others. And also, Missouri, you're not going to have huge media markets. I mean, the Omaha media market's probably infinitely more affordable than St. Louis or Washington, D.C. would be in Virginia. And that kind of stuff matters. The fact that when you put a ground game together, you're looking at a state with about 3 electoral votes as opposed to one with double figures as in the other two races. And there's other ones to mention. I mean, obviously, the Republicans want to play in Florida, which is the biggest of the states with what we think will be slightly competitive Senate races. So all that has to be figured in. So we shall continue to watch. One thing I would love to see public policy polling or any other polling firm do a poll on the race with Kerry as the candidate against who are the other announced Republican candidates and see where this race starts today so we can track it. Tim?
Let me ask you this. Because he is going back to Nebraska, all of a sudden to gauge interest, would it not be safe to say that somebody has already showed him some numbers that indicate the trip to Nebraska is even worth it? Because I don't think he would just do this out of the blue, do you?
Well, it's possible, and maybe those things will get leaked or floated or what have you. You know, and you know, we've seen these polls that remember the polling group that David Johnson of Strategic Vision, they used to poll everybody that was remotely a candidate. They'd poll college football coaches against people and just all kind of crazy matchups. Now, I don't know if somebody's done one of those kind of polls. It'd be interesting if that firm would get rolling back again because they used to provide a lot of polling for us to discuss. Andy was a guest on the show.
If you were doing a what-if poll, I mean, wouldn't Bob Terry be the first Democrat you would think to put in one out there?
Yeah, I mean, the Commandant Sue, and if Bo Pelini was a Democrat, they might do well, too. But I would think Bob Kerry being a realistic candidate would be pretty high. I would be interested to see. I wonder if they would poll him against, you know, the sitting senator there, if he would poll better than Ben Nelson. I mean, that would even be interesting to see because I think he is a little more dynamic personality than Ben Nelson.
The other thing is that having him on the ballot helps the president as well. You know, it might bring people out to vote that want to vote for Democrats, and so it might help.
That's a good point.
And down ballot.
But because in that one congressional district, you know how their electoral vote is allotted. We could still steal an electoral vote right there if somebody like Kerry's on the ballot. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, we thought about that electoral vote. I thought we thought it was gone.
Well, maybe it would
be in play with a huge local candidate. So you know that, and hey, if it, you know, there's the old, you can go on there and do a 69-69 tie scenario if you move the right states around. And so that one vote could come and play. I highly doubt it, but hey, anywhere you can do good.
Every vote counts.
Right. Yeah. Well, continuing to move to a few topics in our last 7 minutes, Tennessee finally redid their maps, both congressional and state senate. And obviously, we're not going to be as versed on the state senate as we would be Congress, but congressional redistricting. They made some districts a little more compact in areas, but did a few other strange things. I know that West Tennessee now has two congressional districts, obviously a city of Memphis district, which is the majority of Shelby County, and then a lot of other places. That district looks pretty clean. Then the 5th is a lot of Nashville area. It's pretty clean. The 7th, a lot of – but the 4th, and I guess the 3rd kind of stuck out at me. The 4th goes way west of, it goes under, we'll say, Nashville, but it goes into Chattanooga, but it splits Bradley County up, which is on the other side of Hamilton County. I read the article and I didn't see why, but why in the world does the 4th District look like it does? Any thoughts?
I think they had probably had to pick out one district to do that, in order to keep the same split that they now have, which of course they want to keep, because it's a 7-2 split for the Republicans, and that's probably as a result of this creative map drawing exactly where it will stay, because I'm sure they couldn't figure out any way to like take out a Memphis Democrat in Memphis, come on.
Nashville would be the other Democrat.
But they could figure out a way to keep it as it is. And in order to do that, one district had to be drawn a little crazy, and that was the winner. So I'm predicting a 7-2 split, to the winner go the spoils type of thing. Now, the state senate which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, and the State House is a far different story, unfortunately.
Yeah, and keeping that split, obviously they have to pack their Democrats where they have to since the Republicans have control. It's hard to believe that between Chattanooga and Knoxville being in the same general vicinity that somehow they couldn't maybe have to pack another Democratic district there. But I guess Knox County, they put more in the third, and I'm trying to look at this little grainy small photo, and but Hamilton's also in the third, so maybe Knoxville's the second. Trying to look at these things, but they probably had to keep those two counties separate, or they might have created at least a swing district with two more urban populations. Tim, do you know on that if Knox is
That's exactly probably right, and exactly what they did not want to do. They looked at this thing and they saw their best case scenario was to keep the same split that they have and do all their really fun work down the ballot, which they did.
Yeah, well, let's get into that. And, Tim, I tell you what, you sound really versed on it. So tell us about what they
did. You both read the link in the story, and they made much of the fact that one GOP state senator might lose his seat in the proposed map. But I guarantee you right now, I've done a little research, five Democrats in that same chamber are targeted for elimination. One of them, his district was completely done away with, as happened here in Georgia, and four others are going to be thrown into races against each other. Included in that is a rising star in the Democratic Party out there in West Tennessee, who probably will choose not to run against the Democrat that he was thrown into the district with, because that particular Democrat is like a minority whip and has been in the state Senate for a very long time. And the state House will probably, 8 to 10 Democrats are gonna get the axe there. And so what do? They put out this big story about how heartbroken they are that one first-term Republican might have to lose his seat because they just have to follow the letter of the law and not split counties up in the legislative process. Isn't that sweet, Catherine?
Senator Oddman out, I guess we'd say.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if I'm not mistaken, we're getting real close to time. A minute 54, maybe we can get through one more topic quick, although I think we're doing pretty good on it. I guess the only one I had that we didn't discuss was the New York Times our New York Times Magazine article about electoral politics and reality TV, and even the president said he'd wait till they voted the last one off the island or something to that effect. But they're saying that basically if you look at reality TV, it's so much democracy, they're just following the electoral model that we've had in place for centuries now. Which is it, Catherine? Does reality TV copy politics, or does politics trying to copy reality TV?
I think reality TV is trying to copy politics.
Yeah.
I mean,
everybody loves.
I watch a lot of that stuff, and I think they. I mean, I don't know that it's really conscious, but I think that all this, you know, provocative, all the, you know, sort of drawing all this drama around the players is very similar to what happens in politics. And I mean,
yeah.
Last night I was watching the debate, and I turned the TV on to ABC a few minutes early, and the TV show Wipeout was on, and I was like, "Oh, did it start early?"
Oh, that would have been a good. Now that might be an intriguing way to have a presidential debate, a Wipeout debate. where they have to jump on the big balls and swim in the river and all that.
Yep.
It would be better than listening to some of those people talk about their positions on things and all their hate speech. So
yeah.
I like that, Catherine, the wipeout. Tim, you take about 10 seconds on this thing.
Yeah, well, I think it's more like a sporting event. It's a horse race, a race to the finish. The horse with stay in power wins. What do you think?
Yeah, I think both are good analogies. It gets covered like sports at times. But we're going to have to do something later on about this. Maybe a let's cast the Republican nomination all over and let's pick some different people. I may kind of draw that up, and we'll have that in a future week. But until then, this has been the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, everybody.
We are the heirs.